Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Wow.
Hello and welcome to the Abroad Japan podcast, probably the best way of learning about life in Japan without actually being in Japan. I'm your host, Chris Broad, and we're joined, as always, by top London radio DJ and certified Japanophile, Mr. Pete Donaldson. Pete, how are you doing?
I'm not sure that little chuckle that you did when you said radio was particularly polite, quite frankly. I'm very furious with you. You sound a lot brighter than you did last time. You weren't very well last week.
Yes, I'm back on my feet. Back on my feet. It's freezing up here, though. I'm in North Japan. Mm. Whenever we do these podcasts, my location seems to change. The other week, guys, I was in Tokyo, where it's about 15 degrees. But where I am now, in Yamagata Prefecture in the north, it's 0 degrees and it's snowing. So it's weird because it's only like an hour's flight between Sakata and Tokyo. But they're a world apart when it comes to the weather. And arguably, Tokyo is better. In fact, it's a lot better. There's no argument to be had. It's definitely better. Tokyo's weather is amazing most of the year round.
Yeah. I watched your behind-the-scenes Patreon video because, against my better judgment, I'm still a Patreon subscriber to the Abroad Japan channel, even though I speak to you every week.
Very good.
It looked very chilly, you rolling around the countryside, complaining about YouTube and just chilling your behind off. It looked very chilly, but very picturesque.
Rolling around the countryside. That's an image, isn't it?
Yeah.
Rolling around in some snow.
In your car.
I'm doing pretty well. I've been a bit bombarded this week. Japan's been going mental. It's the subject of this week's podcast, but you may have heard the emperor is changing. The emperor of Japan, Emperor Akihito, is abdicating and leaving, and his son, Naruhito, is taking over. So things are, you know, pretty... I don't know what the word is I'm looking for. Pretty exciting.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, whenever anything changes in such a big way. So how long has Akihito been in charge? 20 years, something like that? I don't know,
He's been running the show since 1989.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's had a good 30-year run. Mm. But I think the reason it's such a big deal is Japan still has its own calendar. Did you know that? Did you know that, Pete?
I did kind of know that. I think we've spoken about the kind of day-by-day kind of different calendar that older people seem to know more about and whether it's lucky to do certain things on certain days, get married, don't get married, stuff like that. But they've got their own kind of the emperors have their own, not seasons, what would you call them? Like eras, don't you?
Era, that's right. I didn't know this, but each era is kind of not linked to the emperor at all, really. Like, the emperor doesn't choose the name of the era, which is a bit rubbish, you know. If I was the emperor of Japan, at the very least, I'd want to choose the name of my era, like the Abroad era or the Cool era or something. But they don't get to choose. It's chosen by some, officials, various folks. And the one that we're leaving now is the Heisei era. Mm. So Heisei is from 1989 to 2019. Before that was the Showa era for Emperor Hirohito. And that lasted, I think, from 1926 to 1989.
Long one.
And the new one is Reiwa. Reiwa era.
Reiwa.
And that's the big word. They revealed it the other day on TV. All of the nations stood still for some guy to come out on stage and reveal the word Reiwa, which means it's a really difficult thing to translate, to be honest. Mm. I don't think I've seen various different people translate it in different ways, but I think it means rei, the kanji for rei, and there's two kanji. The kanji for rei means like command or order or good or auspicious. And the second kanji, there you go, it's vague. And the second kanji just means harmony. It's wa, you know. So the second kanji is pretty easy. The first one's a bit odd. But yeah,
honestly,
command, order.
It does not make me run towards my Japanese textbooks to want to learn Japanese more, because why do you have to make it so confusing? Guys, rei could mean commands, order, auspicious or good. Well, I'm glad that's sorted out. I'm enjoying the fact that the era is ending and a new one is starting on my birthday, the 30th of April. And also, Crown Prince Naruhito is... he's a spring chicken, isn't he? What's he, 59?
I think about that, yeah.
It's insane.
Spring chicken. I like that. This is a god we're talking about here.
Yeah.
You know, they see the emperor as a godlike figure in Japan.
Right.
It's quite a weird relationship. Like, in the UK, I suppose we can almost draw some comparisons between the UK and Japan. Like, Japan has a royal family, we have a royal family. But in Japan, the royal family, the emperor, is seen in a godlike way, historically. Like, more than just a man. Whereas in the UK, they're just people that live
royalty,
in a big building.
Royalty, historically, in most major monarchies, was seen as kind of representatives of God. And that's how they kept people placid. It's a fascinating story. If you ever read about the end of the war in 45, Second War, when the Japanese gave up, obviously the emperor had to do a speech basically saying that they were going to give up, and the commanders of the army didn't want them to give up. And it was the first time that... So they're basically getting the emperor to record a vinyl record of his of him saying that, you know, we're going to give up on the old fighting business. A lot of people didn't want him to do that. The head of the army was very much against this. And they stormed a palace that he was supposed to be in.
That's right.
And they managed to record these records and hide them from the forces that were going to take over this building. And they managed to sneak them out anyway, somehow. And it was the first time that most of the country had actually heard the emperor speak. And he spoke in this very stilted and strange, kind of like posh language that nobody really talks like anymore. And so it's a little bit like our queen. We sort of think of our queen as quite plummy, but in the emperor's case, no one really spoke like that anymore, because it was incredibly upper class and incredibly old school.
Spot on. The record created a lot of confusion, actually, because they didn't really explicitly state that it was a surrender. It was more like, we're agreeing to the terms of the Allies treaty.
Yeah.
They didn't actually sort of say, yeah, we're done, we're finished, we're quit, stand down directly. So a lot of people confused, along with the old dialect of the emperor. So, yeah. At least they got the emperor. At least they managed to sneak the record out.
Oh, it was so risky. They were getting in there and smashing up the place, trying to find these records. I think they made two of them. They made one and a copy, and getting that out of the building and getting that broadcast to the radio. Bearing in mind that they were also going around smashing up all of the transmitters as well, so nobody could hear it. Was an incredible effort.
What's interesting is I know this story because I read about it on Wikipedia last week, and I'm pretty certain you've done the exact same thing.
It was definitely before Christmas.
Lies. Yeah, you learned this from Wikipedia a week ago, like I did.
But I guess with any kind of like emperorship or royalty, they're so kind of like... Because obviously we're going through massive political upheaval. I mean, is it really upheaval, Brexit? It's just the emperor, us finding out that our own emperor has no clothes, in that our political class have no appetite for actually getting something done or not getting something done, deciding things, compromising and actually governing. No one seems to be interested. Everyone's just in it for themselves and trying to get power. So we're a complete state at the moment. And so you would think, historically, the monarchy would sort of step in and ratify or not ratify plans. But obviously they have no power. They're just kind of ceremonial, symbolic figureheads for the country. So you sort of think of the emperor as in a similar sort of situation. Like, he has no or very little political power when it comes to the power that Shinzo Abe's got.
I think that's why most Japanese people, if you ask them about the emperor, they don't... some of them don't even know his name. I mean, I find... There's a real disconnection between the people and the sort of emperor and the royal family in Japan, just because they don't learn a lot about the royal family, what they do, and truthfully, they don't do a lot in terms of politics. They sort of, again, the same role as in the UK, they sort of talk to foreign dignitaries and, you know, hold lovely banquets and things like that. But maybe that's, I think, the reason he's abdicated, though, he's been ill for quite a bit. He's 85 years old. I think he just wants to just live the rest of his life in peace. So fair play to him. Mm. But this is quite a rare thing in Japan. This is a big deal. And I think a lot of Japanese people were shocked in 2016 when the emperor revealed he wanted to do this. Whereas I feel like if we did that in the UK, I don't think anyone would really care.
No.
I think if the Queen stepped down, we'd be like, well done, good job, have a drink. Off we go, Prince Charles, and off we go again. And I think people wouldn't be overly enthusiastic about that, admittedly. But
definitely.
But, there's definitely parallels between the royal family. What I like the most, though, is when they announced the word Reiwa, they didn't really explicitly state how the word came about, but they found it in like an 8th century poem. Mm. But they said they had a panel of experts who came together to sort of decide on the word.
Mm.
And there's a picture going around on Twitter of all the experts, and they've labelled each expert. So they've got like a lawyer, a firefighter, a scholar, and then there's just two women, and they're not labelled by their professions. They're just labelled as women. So it's like that's their qualification.
Jeez.
Firefighter, lawyer, scholar, woman. It's brilliant. I love it. It just sort of, oh God, typical Japan gender stuff there. But yeah, I found it quite amusing.
That is,
even if there were some serious ramifications there,
classic
along the lines of gender.
The anybody's listening, by the way, if you usually kind of switch off 5 minutes before the end of the podcast, what have we got at the end of this podcast, Chris? Something very special indeed.
Well, I don't know. We've got you say very special. It's very a short special. Little interview with Natsuki.
Yeah, Natsuki's on the pod. Natsuki's on the pod. Natsuki's on the pod.
There's a lot of people on this podcast who probably don't even know who Natsuki is, because I know we've got listeners who don't follow the Abroad in Japan channel. If you could describe Natsuki, the quintessential Japanese man, Pete, how would you describe him?
He's like a Japanese Jack Nicholson. He's aloof, he's sexy, he's frightening, and he's frequently misunderstood.
Yeah, you got that right. And I've spent the last few weeks with him just up here in Sakata. And I did a 10-minute interview with him. About a minute and a half of it was good. And because the thing about Natsuki is he doesn't speak English that well. And I can't have him speaking Japanese on the podcast, given that a lot of people will be confused. So we've got about a minute and a half to 2 minutes of a Natsuki interview at the end of this podcast. And he'll be shedding some light on what he thinks of the emperor, or rather what he would do if he was the emperor of Japan. God forbid. I don't think that'd work out.
Oh,
too well.
Oh, man, the Natsuki
cigarettes
era.
For all.
The life is balloons period. What is the word, Natsuki? Well, it's balloons. Oh, no.
The balloon era.
Well, you sent me a video of Natsuki in your ryokan. I presume it's the same one you were in last time we spoke. But he was basically wearing a robe. I think he was drinking alcohol. But his robe... He had like a kind of like a toweling dressing gown kind of robe situation on. But then he was wearing like a dress belt for like trousers around him, which really made me giggle.
Basically, it's my birthday in about a week or two.
Whoa.
Week before yours, isn't it, Pete? Week before
yours.
Put that on the calendar, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
It's my birthday and I'm not going to be seeing Natsuki on my birthday. So what he did, gave me the birthday present of taking us to a ryokan, traditional Japanese inn, and booking us a room for the night.
Oh.
And luckily we were in separate rooms. Otherwise, I'd be going to sleep in a bed of smoke. But each of the rooms came with an outdoor bath, which was nice.
Lovely.
Yeah. I didn't even use it because I didn't have time. What a waste that was. But it was a lovely room. I always encourage people to try staying in a ryokan when you come to Japan. They cost around $250 to $400 a night, any more than that, and you don't need to spend more than that. But I highly recommend it. I always recommend it to people coming here because it's the quintessential Japanese inn. You know, you picture you sitting there on some tatami mats with a nice dressing gown on, sipping your sake in a scene out of a samurai movie. That's what staying in a ryokan is like.
Mm.
And it's beautiful. You've done it several times now, Pete, haven't you?
Yeah, I've been to a ryokan. You get like kind of because you'd think of them as kind of like almost like spa hotels, but they're not really, are they? They're like businessmen still use them. Like people doing business still use them, but they're just like a cut above, aren't they? And you'll have access to a little kind of a bath or an onsen, and it's like, oh, it's so relaxing. It's lovely.
Well, it depends. It depends what one you go for, really. Yeah. Like, if you go for an expensive one, what they do is they throw in a dinner package as well.
Mm.
And the dinner typically costs like 5,000 to 6,000 yen because it's like an 8-course meal.
Right.
It's a never-ending onslaught of food. Like the other night when I did it with Natsuki, we had shabu shabu. Do you know what that is?
Oh, I didn't know shabu.
Shabu shabu.
Shabu shabu. It's meat, isn't it? It's meat on a. Is it grilled meat?
Good.
I forget.
Close.
Close.
Not quite. Shabu shabu is onomatopoeia, and it means the sound of swishing of the water.
Oh, it's boiled. Boiled.
There you go. It's like a hot pot, yeah. So you get this big plate of like beef and pork, and you swish it through the water, and off you go. It was pretty good.
Yeah.
But I was stuffed by the end of it. 8 courses. They bring out like sashimi. They bring out meat. They bring out they brought out the most bizarre dish I think I've ever had, which was a apple custard pie with a fish in it. And if you could avoid the fish in the middle of it and its head sticking out,
it was
a rather nice custard pie. But the fish screwed the whole thing up. It wasn't even a dessert. It was like middle of the way through the meal.
Yeah.
I don't know what they were thinking. The chef clearly... I don't know if he was the best chef in the world. It was an all right ryokan, to be fair. But
I think
he'd only made
the custard pie, the custard tart, and then he was just like, oh, I've got those fish heads to get rid of. I know what to do.
Improvisation.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, he'd probably some leftover fish. Fuck it, I'll stick it in the apple pie. Job done, innit?
Well, that's other than that,
it was good.
Yeah, well, that's how, like, fish pie over here works. Like, any just, as my dad used to call it, lips and arseholes, son, lips and arseholes. Any bit of fish that's left over, any chunks of fish, any... rings of calamari, you just stick them in. Load of butter, load of cheese, yeah, lovely old job.
It's the way of eating in the north. I do recommend it though. If you've ever stayed in a ryokan, let us know. Let us know about your experiences. Desperately clutching their experiences from people. But I must admit, over the last few months, one of my favourite things to come out of this podcast has been hearing about other people's stories. And we've got a lot. We get more like stories in the fax machine these days than questions, don't we? We got one story that caught my eye this week, and it's from Sammy Sid. I don't know if there's actually a name, Sammy Sid.
Sammy Sid.
Sounds like they've used two names. But anyway, hello, Sammy Sid. It says, hello, Chris and Pete. I usually listen to your podcast while I'm preparing the day's lesson for my woodworking group on a Friday morning.
Ooh.
It's very nice. Anyway, I wanted to tell you this short story about my cousin who went to play with his doom metal band in Tokyo. What's a doom metal band? Doom.
I don't know. What, I don't know what the difference between doom metal and dark metal and black metal. Delineations of metal. I just, you know, where does hardcore end? And where does metal start? I just don't know.
Well, hardcore starts with doom metal. That sounds amazing. it sounds like something. I don't know. I'm picturing the video game and music.
I'm picturing
maybe the
yeah.
Music
I'm,
out of the
I'm
video
picturing
game.
The remember the Eurovision band that won that year from Finland, Lordi. they were a bit glam. They were just kind of dressed like Kiss, but more latex. They were like kind of witches and warlocks and stuff, dressed as like futuristic kind of warriors. It was something else.
I cannot profess to ever watching the Eurovision Song Contest on account of the fact that the UK never ever wins. Anyway, on with the story. Apparently, the doom metal band, they played an amazing set and partied until the early hours in the morning. But their last minute Airbnb fell through. So they decided to book out a karaoke room for 4 or 5 hours of rest and sleep before their early flight the next day. It's important to point out at this point, a lot of people actually do stay in karaoke booths because they're open 24 hours a day, so you can just go in there at 3 a.m, sleep until 7 a.m, and have a nice sleep,
or sing
in between if you want. You get anything in a karaoke room: music, food, drink. It's brilliant. The only problem was that 10 minutes after they got settled into their room, somebody booked the next booth and started practicing playing the trumpet very badly.
No.
My cousin said he would never forget the hours of torture, desperately trying to sleep in a cramped karaoke booth with his bandmates next to him, with a terrible trumpeteer next door. Oh, sod that.
That sounds
wonderful. Already bad enough hearing people ruin songs next door, let alone turn up with a bloody trumpet.
Yeah.
Start playing. Not a bad idea, though.
No,
actually.
Pretty good. I'm quite into that, to be honest. Yeah, I mean, I guess
trumpets.
It'd probably be quite well kind of squared away, as in sound-wise. Because if you're spending a lot of money on a karaoke room, because karaoke rooms can run you a bit of money. If you forget, for example, like we did in Osaka, or that I did in Osaka, I forgot that all the drink is free. And so I did not imbibe. I did not get involved.
Oh, yeah.
But I guess the sound proof is pretty good.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss. There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? Mine's pretty low after coming back from the craziness of WrestleMania, too many body slams and all that. And I'm pretty jealous of my co-host Chris, who seems to have been exploring Japan's most isolated hotel. He's definitely winning in the relaxation race, but I'm determined to catch up with him. It can be easy to get swept up in social gatherings and spread ourselves too thin, but with therapy, you can learn to prioritize your time and recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/Japan today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Japan.
Yeah, how could I forget your rendition of I Want It That Way by the Backstreet Boys? I remember the look on your face, though, when I kept asking Pete throughout the night, do you want to get a drink? And he went, no, I'm all right. And then right at the end, he went, oh, they're free. And I went, yeah, they're free. It's all you can drink. And he went, oh, no. And that's what
I'm not a cheapskate.
Disappointment on your face.
I'm not a cheapskate anyway, but I probably would have got something like a Bloody Mary or something, maybe. Because it's like, I love Bloody Marys, and I love, like, I actually love Virgin Marys. I love anything with Tabasco and Worcestershire sauce in. I bloody love anything like that. And
you would have drained the taps dry.
I would have drained the taps dry of that nonsense.
But there you go, karaoke and ryokans. We've got some questions here. We've got one from Pedro. I'll hand it over to you, Pete.
Okay.
I'll have a sip of my drink.
Oh, what are you drinking? Let me guess. Right. Well,
No coffee tonight.
No coffee. It's 8 o'clock in the evening. Yeah. What are you drinking?
I'm drinking water out of a really big tin cup. Like the sort of tin cup you get Moscow Mule in.
Right. Are you in
it's
the wall?
Really weird. I feel like a pirate.
A canteen. You're drinking from a canteen.
That's right.
Jesse says, it's Pedro, isn't it? Thank you for the podcast. In the chaotic and hot traffic of Tijuana, Mexico, you guys are a gentle cool breeze coming out of the car speakers, making my drive home bearable. Well, just imagine Chris right now in Sakata. Chilly as you like, just, you know, breezing through the hot heat of Tijuana right now.
Sounds beautiful, right? I
will be visiting Japan for 2 weeks in April/May. Something that is a bit of a concern is that I'll be landing as soon as Golden Week starts. Any tips or advice on travelling during this holiday? What's it like? All the best, Pedro. Golden Week. Tell us all about it, Chris.
Oh, God, Golden Week. Golden Week is an annual event.
Mm.
It's one of the longest holidays in the Japanese calendar. I think this year it runs along the last week of April and slightly into the first few days of May. And basically during that time, everybody returns home to their towns, their family, you know, the family home. So they leave big cities like Tokyo, Sendai, whatever, and go out into the countryside. What this means is that all the highways are rammed. The trains are just don't even think about getting on a train.
Oh.
And plane journeys. I remember my friend was going, I think, to Taiwan. Plane tickets are usually £200 to £300, but it was like £1,500
now. Bloody hell.
During Golden Week, just to give you an idea of how busy it is. Mm. Rule of thumb, during Golden Week, I typically just hide in my apartment under a duvet and do nothing. And it's great. Because if you go to a restaurant, it's full. If you go to a temple, it's full. If you do anything, it's rubber. It's just...
Full.
Oh, it's awful. I think you can see I'm clearly don't like Golden Week.
Not a fan.
But if you're coming in Golden Week, my advice is book everything in advance, for the love of God. If you haven't booked a hotel or Airbnb or anything, you are in trouble. If you're going to somewhere like Tokyo or anywhere, to be honest, it's really hard. I'm actually in Tokyo for Golden Week, I've just realised. Oh, shit.
Oh no.
Why am I doing that?
You'd better book your hotel, mate.
I don't think I've booked it either. I'm doing some event for Tokyo Creative.
Well, they could book it, can't they?
So I've got to go to Tokyo for like 3 or 4 days in the height of Golden Week.
Oh, what am I doing with my life? Sleeping in karaoke rooms. Oh, no.
Oh, I genuinely am. Oh, no. This is awful. Don't make me go. But yeah, no, book everything in advance, for the love of God. And in fact, that's a general rule for anything in Japan.
Yeah.
Japan isn't the sort of country where you just rock up and pick your hotel on a whim. You need to kind of book it in advance to stand a chance. So that's what I'll say to you, Pedro. Despite my whinging and moaning, though, I'm sure you have a great time. Just bear in mind, things will be busy. If you're going to a restaurant, try and get there by 11:30. Otherwise, there will be a big queue. By 12 o'clock, you know, the queues will be out of this world. Japanese people love to queue and they're very patient, unlike us folks in the West. I can't stand a queue. If I see a queue, I run away and I'll be having my lunch at a convenience store. Maybe that's some advice. Just get your lunch at a convenience store and wander around instead, because restaurants are going to be full.
Yeah.
And bring a tent. Sleep in a tent.
Oh, I had some A5 Wagyu steak of the weekend. I just remembered, speaking of restaurants.
Right, show off.
I'm just saying, well, it's really rare to find it anywhere outside of Japan, isn't it? It's really hard to kind of transport without it.
You had A5 Wagyu beef in London.
That's what they were advertising it as at MASH in London. You could, they get a very small amount every week, and they sort of said every time people order it, 9 times out of 10, they don't have any left. But we had this little tasting menu, which was a bit of A5 Wagyu, a bit of New York brisket, you know, just some other stuff as well. And it was like, I think it was like, we had 70 grams, and it was like...
70 grams.
70 grams
tiny.
And like maybe 100
that's
grams.
That's not a
of,
meal.
No, it's not. 70 grams of that stuff, and then maybe 100 grams of something else, two other things, and it came to about 140 quid. It was not a cheap meal, but I just wanted everyone who I was with to sort of taste it. And they were blown away by it. But again, you don't need to eat a lot of really good Wagyu steak, do you? Because it's like... Otherwise,
you need to eat more than 70 grams. There's no way I'd be happy with 70 grams.
It's very greasy, though. It's very oily. So
it's just teasing.
You know. It's a tease.
1 to 10?
I hate to sound like the dickhead who's tried it in Japan, but I was like, yeah, I mean, it doesn't taste as good as it. But maybe. We had it in, like, not the most, you know, moneyed restaurant ever. We had, like, Wagyu steak in, I think the first night we went to, in Sakata, weren't we? We had it. Me and you and your Canadian friend, I believe.
You're right.
We had it there, and it was like, fucking hell, this is the best steak I've ever tasted. And then we went out for a bit, and that was not like, it was expensive, but it probably wasn't the most expensive place in the world. It wasn't the fanciest place in the world. It was just like a bar, wasn't it, really? But they were serving this amazing steak.
Yeah, it's a local restaurant. It was about $50, I think, for that Wagyu beef.
Yeah.
So you got a bargain, and it was really good.
Yeah.
But, did you feel quite smug? Did you show off to your friends? Did you say, I've had Kobe beef in Kobe?
Yeah, but the problem is with being a dickhead in real life is that you don't need to act like a dickhead. You're already a dickhead, so people know that you're a dickhead. So people know that you've got that in you, so it's fine.
Yeah, fair point. I feel that's an accurate description for me as well. We've got a question here from Jesse. He says, Dear Chris and Pete, great show. My name's Jesse. All right. Nice to meet you, Jesse. I don't know why I've read out Jesse's name like 4 times in the first opening line. I listen to you guys at 5 a.m. during my morning commute in Washington, D.C. Fantastic. That's pretty cool. We've had Tijuana, Mexico. We've had Washington, D.C. This is just people living in these wacky, awesome, exciting places. that better than where I live. My wife and I are planning a first-time trip to Japan. We want to climb Mount Fuji. Any advice on this excursion? We miss your video since it was taken down. Advice on getting there or leaving luggage somewhere or sleeping outside like you did. Renting equipment? Thanks for the podcast, Jesse. Yes, so Mount Fuji. I've got a friend who's coming in May to Japan, and top of their list was to climb Mount Fuji. And I had to point out to them, you can't really do it outside of August and September because it's very snowy and very dangerous on top. So there's only 2 months in the year that you can climb Mount Fuji, unfortunately. My first bit of advice is get the bus from Shinjuku. Save yourself some time and hassle. Just get on the bus. It's nice and simple. It takes you all the way from Shinjuku Station up to, I believe, Station 5, if I recall. Station 5 on Mount Fuji.
Right.
And you can put your bags in a locker near Shinjuku Station. Put all your luggage and stuff in a locker if you don't have a hotel.
Yeah.
In terms of staying on the mountain, I've never done that. But you can book a hut if you plan to climb throughout the night. Most people climb throughout the... They start kind of in the evening or the late afternoon. They climb up for a bit, have a nap, and then wake up at 2 a.m. and finish the job, like I did.
Yeah.
I didn't book a place to sleep, so I had to sleep on a rock. It was very unpleasant. One of the most unpleasant nights of my life. In fact, there's not a lot about my Mount Fuji climbing experience that I particularly enjoy or relish. Other than the video, which people seem to like. And then it got taken down by YouTube for copyright infringement. Yay. I have to put it back somehow. I've still got a copy of it. I've got to try and work out how to take off the music and put some normal music on.
Well, that'll be, I mean, that'll be an easy hit for you, won't it, video-wise? Bang it up. There we go. There's me up to Fuji again.
I'll be damned if I'm doing it again, though, honestly. They say there's a proverb, a wise man climbs Mount Fuji once, a Muppet climbs it twice.
Yeah.
And I can see why, because it wasn't that much fun. That said, if I did it again, I'd climb during the day, because the sunrise, which everyone climbs for, it's all right, but you've probably seen the sunrise before. And it's you just, yeah, I felt like, I don't know why I climbed during the night. You put yourself through, it's just so much unnecessary hell by climbing through the night, just for a sunrise. Honestly, I just climbed during the day. My friend did it in one day. He got up early, I think he started at 7 a.m., got up around 11 a.m. and then came down by 3 or 4. Perfect. That's what I would do if I did it again.
Oh, so you could actually,
rather than
so you could
it's
actually
like
climb,
a 24-hour nightmare.
You could actually climb up and down in a day then. So it's not like you have to climb up in, like, you know, it takes like 8 hours and then you sleep there and then come back down. You can get up quite early, get up there, and then get down.
Absolutely, absolutely. But people just love the sunrise. It's become like that is part of the whole experience of climbing Mount Fuji. For some reason. It was nice. A little bit ruined. I reckon there must have been like 1,000 people up on the mountain with us. And that's not an exaggeration. It's genuinely like Mount Fuji becomes a theme park attraction in August and September just because of the sheer number of people that want to climb it.
Yeah.
So when the sun rose up, everyone just went mental and everyone was just shouting, "Sugoi, sugoi!" And it just kind of ruined the moment a little bit. You know, I don't know what the equivalent would be in English if people were just shouting on the top of a mountain like, "Yeah, it's the sun!"
Fucking hell!
Fucking yeah, the sun! Yeah! It's just a bit annoying. Go for it. Go for it. Do it between July and September. And have a great time with it, Jesse. My advice, though, if you can book yourself into a little house, go for it. Because if you're going to climb at night, it definitely pays off to sleep along the way. And I know people that have slept, and it's much more pleasant to do that.
Yeah.
But you will be crammed into a little room with like 100 people sleeping on your face because it's just so cramped. So you see the pictures of these rooms you sleep in. It's like a free-for-all. You just make your bed wherever, and then people just like throw a pillow on your face and use your face as a pillow. Not even exaggeration. It's mental.
Oh, dear. That's awful.
And that's why you should climb it, Pete.
Yeah, well, I've never done it, have I? So, but I didn't realise you could climb it and then climb back down in like a day. I think I'd be up for that. But it's the queuing I can't be arsed with. It's the other people as hell. Is there like a trail that you can do that nobody else does? Just go off east.
Yeah, there's definitely some more secretive paths, but I think if you just climb during the day, there won't be that kind of traffic.
Right.
When I climbed it, there were queues a lot of the time, and that ruined it. You know, when you climb a mountain, I've climbed a few mountains, and it's a very nice. I love climbing mountains. It's very peaceful, relaxing. You kind of take it at your own pace. You enjoy the scenery. With Mount Fuji, you are climbing in a queue a lot of the time, in the dark, like falling over rocks. It's cold. It's like minus two or three at the top because it's really high. It's 3,800 metres. There's just generally no pleasure in it. It's just very painful. And I hate it. And I'd probably be doing it again.
Oh, dear.
But you've got to do it once, Pete. You've got to do it once.
Yeah, I know. So, maybe you could come with me and it's, this year, and you could be that aforementioned idiot.
Yeah, you can do the proverb. Good. I think it's time we unleash Natsuki. We wrap things up and unleash Natsuki. He will...
making his first appearance on the Abroad in Japan podcast. I mean, it's been a while. This podcast has been running for a year now, and Natsuki's never really featured apart from the odd stab. he's on the pod, Chris.
He is. And he's only on for about a minute and a half.
Enjoy!
I submitted some questions to him, but here he is. Here's Natsuki. Enjoy. So I'm here with Natsuki. How are you doing, Natsuki?
Hello! I'm fine.
If you became Emperor of Japan tomorrow afternoon, which could happen in an alternate reality, what kind of rules would you create? What would you do?
Souvenir jumper.
A souvenir jumper for everyone in Japan. Yeah. The finest souvenir jumper.
Present for many people.
Excellent. Well, there you go. If Natsuki was emperor, that's just a taste of some of the incredible policies he would instigate. I've got some questions here, Natsuki, from some listeners. Izzy from Colchester says, my question for Natsuki is, what superpower would you have if you could, and why?
I want to talk to animals.
You want to talk to animals? Why?
I have a cat, and every day cat's talking.
Meowing.
Meow. 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 It's but nuance, only nuance.
Right, well, absolutely. It's difficult to know the nuance of it, of a meowing cat. What would you talk to your cat about?
Are you like me?
Do you like me?
Do you like me?
That's the first question. It's the first question you ask your cat. Do you like me?
Do you like me? Answer is...
Yes.
I'm very happy now.
If that is what your cat sounds like, it's probably a good thing it can't talk. Question from Sebastian. Natsuki, how do you keep so energised and positive about life?
Because every day I'm drinking. Sake.
Yeah. There you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Natsuki, once again, thank you, Natsuki, for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, I'll let you go and have a cigarette.
Good old Natsuki. Chris, I think that is a lovely idea from Natsuki, making ceremonial jumpers for the new era. That's where my mind always goes to.
The first thing, what I love about Natsuki is the sheer randomness of it all, right? Mm. Most people would say, you know, I'll just give people money or do something nice. No, he wants to give everyone a jumper, a souvenir jumper. Don't know where that came from, but fantastic. I think we can all agree there's nothing better you could receive from the Emperor.
I think so.
Than a souvenir jumper. And I can't complain with his animal talk superpower ability. I'm sure we will be able to throw some more questions to Natsuki in the future. We didn't have much time to interview him this time, hence the really short interview. But he'll be back, don't worry. Next week, we'll be talking about what you want to do in your first 48 hours in Japan. It's an interesting topic. People always ask me about it. What should they do in their first day or two in Japan? Send us your ideas in. What you've done if you've come to Japan, or what you want to do when you come to Japan. What would you want to do in your first 48 hours? And let's take jet lag out of the equation, because otherwise everyone's just going to say jet lag, because that is, to be fair, the real answer. My first 48 hours in Japan. Typically, just me in a room laying face down crying at jet lag. But yeah, let's take that out of the equation. What would you want to do? Where would you go? What would you do? Who would you meet? What would you eat? Let us know at abroadinjapanpodcast@gmail.com, and we'll be reading them out next week and having a bit of fun with that. But for now, guys, that's all. Anything you'd like to add, Pete?
No. Look after yourselves in this.
No.
No. Look after yourselves in the new generation.
Reiwa.
All right.
Well, it doesn't start until May 1st. There's no Reiwa yet.
All right. So we could do the first podcast in the Reiwa era a little bit later on.
We could.
Under Crown Prince Naruhito.
Something to look forward to, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
Even though it literally means nothing will change. nothing of actual value for the podcast. But
All right, then.
Away we go. But for now, guys, no matter where you might be, out there in the big wide world, have yourself a great week, and we'll be back next Thursday. Do it all over again. Have a good one.
Bye.
Catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.